Welcome to 88 Diagnoses, the deep dive. Okay, picture this. You're on call, patient comes in, fever. Just won't quit. Days turn into weeks. Wow. You've done the standard workup, everything, but you're still, you know, scratching your head.
Yeah.
That's not just a tough case. It's classic fever of unknown origin, FUO.
Right.
And when we say classic FUO, we're not just talking about any old fever without a clear cause. Okay. Most fevers, they resolve pretty quick, or they show their hand, give you clues.
Exactly. They develop distinguishing features.
Yeah. But FUO, this is different. We're talking prolonged fever, no established why, even after a pretty intensive initial look.
That's a perfect setup. And to get technical for a second, the strict definition for classic FUO.
Hmm.
We're looking at a temperature over 38.3 Celsius. That's 100.9 Fahrenheit.
Right.
Recorded several times, lasting more than 3 weeks. And the key part,
yeah,
despite appropriate initial evaluation, whether they're in the hospital or seen as an outpatient, and actually some folks are even suggesting maybe a slightly lower threshold now, like 38.0 C or 100.4 F, recognizing that even lower grade persistent fevers can be just as tough.
Wow. And get this, it's estimated there are over 200 documented causes of classic FUO.
200, yeah.
200. So if you're a resident facing this and you feel like you're looking for a needle in a haystack, well, you're not wrong. You're not alone.
Definitely. It's a diagnostic challenge.
It's like being a medical detective, right?
Yeah.
But with 200 suspects and just a few initial clues. So our mission here in this deep dive is to give you a bit of a shortcut, help you map out this landscape of elusive fevers, hopefully make it feel a little less overwhelming.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's unpack this diagnostic puzzle. 200 possibilities sounds impossible, but experts have grouped them. There are five main categories, which thankfully gives us a roadmap.
Exactly. That roadmap is key. Based on, well, lots of meta-analyses, the breakdown usually looks something like this. Infections are top dog. Most common.
Okay.
Around, say, 34 to 39% of cases. Then you've got rheumatologic conditions, maybe 20 to 23%.
Hmm.
Neoplasms, cancers, that's about 12 to 16%. Miscellaneous causes, a smaller slice, maybe 6 or 7%.
All right.
And then there's that big chunk, often frustrating, that remain undiagnosed, somewhere between 20, maybe 25%.
So infections are still number one, but almost a quarter of the time, we just don't find a definite answer.
That's right. Even after a thorough workup.
And what's really interesting here, you mentioned this earlier, is that the causes of FUO aren't set in stone. It changes, right? Depending on where you are in the world and the patient's age.
Profoundly.
Yeah.
They shift it profoundly. Now, comparing studies across decades is tricky. You know, with advances in diagnostics, new diseases popping up.
Sure.
There seems to be a trend, maybe infections decreasing slightly over time, while rheumatologic causes might be ticking up.
Interesting.
And geography, huge factor. For instance, infections cause about half of all FUOs in Southeast Asia.
Wow.
But only maybe 30% in Europe. Things like TB, brucellosis, those endemic infections, they really shaped the local picture.
So that travel history isn't just a checkbox.
Never just a checkbox. It's a critical diagnostic tool.
Absolutely.
And age. Does a 70-year-old with FUO look different diagnostically than, say, a 25-year-old?
Oh, absolutely. The data pretty consistently shows that older adults, let's say over 65, are actually more likely to have an identifiable cause found for their FUO.
Really?
Compared to younger adults, where a higher percentage might remain undiagnosed. For older patients, you're thinking more about things like giant cell arteritis, maybe UTIs presenting atypically, various malignancies.
It's like they've had more time to develop the conditions that cause it.
Sort of, yeah. That's one way to think about it.
And it's even thought that big global trends like climate change could mess with infectious disease patterns.
Right.
And potentially shift what we see as common FUO causes down the line, affecting where bugs live, maybe even human migration.
It's a dynamic field. Medicine doesn't exist in a vacuum. Okay, time for an on-the-wards tip. Always, always take a thorough travel history. And really consider the patient's age right up front when you're thinking FUO. A 75-year-old, that triggers a different initial thought process than a 25-year-old. You'll prioritize different possibilities.
Exactly. So if you can't remember everything, remember this. Classic FUO causes fall into five buckets. Infections, rheumatologic, neoplasms, miscellaneous, and undiagnosed. But how common each bucket is really varies by geography and the patient's age. Always factor those in.
All right, let's dive into infections. They're the most common cause, so it's where we often jump first, and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But these aren't always your, well, They aren't your run-of-the-mill infections that flag on the first culture. They can be tricky.
That's the whole challenge. Many present really vaguely, just generalized symptoms, non-specific stuff, makes diagnosis a real head-scratcher.
Yeah.
Take tuberculosis, TB. It's consistently in the top three causes of classic FUO worldwide, especially big in places like Europe, Southeast Asia, the Western Pacific. And critically, it's usually extrapulmonary TB causing FUO. Not the lung kind you see on chest x-ray easily.
Ah, okay, so outside the lungs.
Right. Think lymph nodes, liver, bone, even the CNS. And here's a pearl. Those TB tests, the skin test, TSD, or the IGRAs, they can lack sensitivity, especially in active TB, particularly miliary TB.
So a negative test doesn't mean no TB?
Absolutely not. Doesn't rule it out if you have strong clinical suspicion. You got to dig deeper.
Okay. What else? What other infectious curveballs?
Well, mononucleosis-like syndromes. We all think Epstein-Barr virus, EBV, in teenagers, right?
Sure, the kissing disease.
But you absolutely have to consider acute HIV syndrome. It can look almost identical to mono.
Right, and missing that is bad.
It's critical to catch early. For the patient's health, obviously, but also for public health, preventing transmission.
So what clues point towards acute HIV over mono?
You get the fever, swollen glands, sore throat, like mono. But look for maybe painful mouth ulcers, a rash. And always, always consider relevant sexual exposures.
Even if the patient doesn't initially bring it up.
Absolutely. Consider HIV and any mono-like illness that feels a bit off. The diagnosis early on often means finding the HIV virus itself, like with a viral load or antigen test, when the antibody test is still negative. That's the window period.
Got it. Important distinction. What about those infections tied more to specific places?
Right. Geography matters. Brucellosis, for example. It's the most common FUO cause in the Eastern Mediterranean, often linked to unpasteurized animal products, raw milk, certain soft cheeses.
Things you might ask about in the travel or dietary history.
Exactly. And then for any FUO patient, especially if they have valve issues or a new murmur, you have to think about infective endocarditis, infection of heart valves.
High mortality if missed.
Very high. Blood cultures are key, obviously.
Yeah.
But be aware of culture-negative endocarditis.
Why would cultures be negative?
Could be prior antibiotic use, even just one dose sometimes. Or it could be caused by tricky bugs that don't grow well in standard cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Coxiella burnettii, which causes Q fever, or the HAC group bacteria.
HAC, mind me.
Yeah, it's an acronym. Haemophilus aggregatobacter cardiobacterium Eikanella kingella. We're known for being fastidious, slow-growing,
right,
can cause endocarditis, but hide from cultures.
Okay, good to remember. What about localized infections? Can something like an abscess cause FUO without obvious local signs? Seems weird.
It absolutely can. It often does present atypically. An internal abscess, maybe deep in the abdomen, it might just present with fever. No specific belly pain, no tenderness you can find on exam.
Mm-hmm. Elusive.
Very. Or prostatitis in men can be really subtle. Mm-hmm. Just fever, maybe some vague pelvic ache. Imaging might be normal. Urine culture is normal.
Wow.
Even bone or joint infections. Usually painful, right? But in patients with nerve damage, like diabetics with neuropathy, they might not feel the typical pain. Symptoms can be super vague. And always consider if maybe a disseminated infection, like TB or Brucella, is causing that localized bone infection.
Okay, lots of infectious pitfalls. So if you can't remember everything, remember this. Infections causing FUO are often atypical. Think extrapulmonary TB, think acute HIV mimicking mono, think culture negative endocarditis, and those sneaky localized infections like hidden abscesses or quiet prostatitis.
Nicely summarized.
All right, so we've considered infections, maybe ruled them out or the picture just doesn't fit. What's next on the roadmap? Those rheumatologic conditions, they're a big slice of the pie too.
Indeed they are. And some have really characteristic features. The most common rheumatologic cause of classic FUO is adult Still's disease.
Okay, Still's disease.
Often hits younger to middle-aged adults, say 15 to 45. Presents typically with a triad. High spiking fevers, a distinctive rash that's often salmon-colored. Comes and goes with the fever, evanescent they call it.
Okay, evanescent rash.
And arthritis or joint pain. But the real kicker, the lab pearl. A markedly elevated serum ferritin. Often way up, like over 3,000 NGML, sometimes sky high, tens of thousands.
Wow, ferritin over 3,000, that's a huge clue.
It really is, flags it pretty strongly.
Yep.
And for our older patients, is there a rheumatologic emergency we need to worry about with FUO?
Spot on, yes. For patients over 65, giant cell arteritis, or GCA, is a common and critical rheumatologic cause. You're thinking headache, maybe jaw pain when chewing, jaw claudication tenderness over the temporal artery.
Right, the classic signs.
But the urgent part, the twist, it can cause sudden painless vision loss in one eye, transient monocular vision loss, or amaurosis fugax.
And that can mean?
It can herald permanent blindness or even a stroke. It's a true medical emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So if you even suspect GCA based on the symptoms and maybe age.
Start steroids.
Start high-dose steroids immediately. Don't wait for the temporal artery biopsy confirmation. Treat first, biopsy later. You're trying to save their vision or prevent a stroke.
Crucial. And labs for GCA.
You'd expect markedly elevated inflammatory markers,
yeah.
ESR and CRP, usually very high. And often, these patients also have symptoms of polymyalgia rheumatica, or PMR. That's the shoulder and hip pain and stiffness, especially bad in the mornings.
Okay, so GCA and PMR often travel together.
Frequently, yes.
Now, quick pause. You just mentioned sky-high ferritin with adult stills, and earlier you brought up HLH, hemophagocytic lymphohistiocytosis, also with crazy high ferritin.
Mm-hmm.
As a resident, seeing that ferritin level pop, how do you start teasing those two apart? They both sound serious.
Excellent question. Critical distinction. That super high ferritin is a huge red flag for both, absolutely.
Okay.
But the rest of the picture is key.
Okay.
With adult stills, you're looking for that specific evanescent rash, the arthritis, maybe sore throat prodrome, usually in a younger adult. It's often a diagnosis of exclusion.
Right.
HLH. That's usually a much more dramatic, rapid, multi-system illness. You'll see other blood counts, tanking cytopenias. Often there's a clear trigger, severe infection, malignancy, maybe an autoimmune flare. HLH can hit any age, and it's often an ICU-level emergency. Very different trajectory.
So context is everything. The ferritin is a clue, not the whole story.
Exactly. Combine the lab with the full clinical picture and how sick the patient is.
Got it. That's super helpful. Okay, moving on. Malignancies. Scary thought for FUO, but we have to consider them.
We do. And hematologic cancers, blood cancers, are the big players here. They made up almost 90% of the cancer-related FUOs.
90%? Wow.
Yeah. Lymphoma is number one, responsible for over half of all cancer FUOs. So you're looking for swollen lymph nodes you can feel, maybe in a large spleen, night sweats, weight loss.
Key symptoms.
Exactly. And in Hodgkin's lymphoma, sometimes you see that weird Pell-Ebstein fever pattern, days of high fever, then days of no fever, back and forth.
Pell-Ebstein. Okay.
But don't forget leukemia and multiple myeloma either. They can also present with FUO.
What about solid tumors? Less common.
And less common as a cause of FUO, yeah.
Yeah.
But one to remember is renal cell carcinoma, kidney cancer. Up to 20% of those patients might present with just fever as their main symptom. No flank pain, no blood in the urine yet, just fever.
Good one to keep in the back of your mind. Okay, finally, that miscellaneous category, the grab bag. Any zebras in there worth knowing about?
Definitely a few. Sarcoidosis can do it. That's the granulomatous disease.
Mm.
Often shows up with enlarged lymph nodes in the chest on imaging, bilateral hilioadenopathy.
Right, sarcoid.
But maybe the most clinically impactful one in this bucket, because it's so serious, is hemophagocytic lymphohistiocytosis, HLH. We touch on it already.
Yeah, the super high ferritin again.
Right. Rare but deadly if missed. Fever. Big spleen, crashing blood counts, and that sky-high ferritin. It's a hyperinflammatory state you need to recognize fast.
Okay, HLH, got it. And then the really tough one, factitious fever.
Ah, the great mimicker, yes. This is when patients are intentionally making themselves seem febrile, usually tied to underlying psychiatric issues. It's a diagnosis of exclusion and a really challenging one.
What are the clues? How would you even suspect that?
Well, sometimes you see extreme temperatures, like over 41 C, but the patient doesn't look that sick, no chills, no sweating like you'd expect. Or they have a long history of weird symptoms, tons of negative tests, maybe bizarre blood cultures with multiple different skin bugs.
Tricky. And you have to be careful not to jump to that conclusion.
Absolutely not. It's a diagnosis you back into after ruling out everything else, and even then, with great caution.
And one last thing in miscellaneous, don't forget drug fever.
Good point. Always check the medication list. Lots of drugs can cause fever. And interestingly, you don't always see a rash or high eosinophil count with it.
So absence of those doesn't rule it out.
Nope. Often another diagnosis of exclusion. Stop the suspected drug, see if the fever goes away.
Okay, lots to unpack there. So if you can't remember everything, remember this. For rheumatologic FUO, think adult stills, high ferritin, and GCA, older adults, risk to vision. For malignancy, blood cancers like lymphoma are key. And in miscellaneous, remember HLH, super high ferritin, very sick patient, and the tough challenge of factitious fever.
Perfect.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, on the wards? Diagnosing FUO, it's a real test. Needs broad knowledge, but also that meticulous attention to detail. It's definitely a journey, not a sprint. Often about ruling things out, hunting for those key clues.
Right. And to make it practical, let's walk through a quick hypothetical case, like something you might actually see. Imagine a 70-year-old woman comes in. She's had 4 weeks of daily fevers, up to maybe 101.5 Fahrenheit, 38.6 Celsius.
Yeah.
Started after a cold, but the cold got better, the fever didn't. Labs show high ESR, high CRP.
Okay. Inflammatory markers are up.
And she also complains of this new dull ache. Both shoulders, both hips. Worse in the mornings, feels really stiff.
Mm.
Given her age, those labs, those specific morning stiffness symptoms.
Yeah.
What's the first broad category jumping into your mind?
Okay. 70 years old, high ESR CRP, shoulder hip pain, morning stiffness. I'm immediately thinking rheumatologic.
Right.
And specifically with those symptoms, I'm thinking polymyalgia rheumatica, PMR. Am I on the right track?
You are absolutely on the right track. PMR is a great thought. Fits very well.
Yeah.
But what's the other diagnosis that travels with PMR, the more dangerous cousin we just talked about, especially in this age group with FUO and high inflammatory markers?
Right. The critical one, giant cell arteritis, GCA.
Exactly. And what's the life-threatening complication you're worried about?
Vision loss or stroke.
Right. So what's the immediate action you take?
Start empiric steroids, high dose. Right away. Don't wait for the biopsy.
Perfect. Okay, now for the twist. You start the steroids. Her fever gets better. Stiffness improves. Good. But on follow-up, she mentions this weird rash. It's faint, kind of salmon-colored, and it only seems to pop up when she occasionally still gets a bit warm. And someone check a ferritin level just because. And it's sky high, over 4,000.
Whoa, okay. Steroids helped, but now this rash and a massive ferritin, that original PMRGCA thought. Maybe it's not the full picture. What else could cause fever, joint aches, and that crazy high ferritin with a rash?
Now, what diagnosis comes back into play? Maybe mimicking some of the GCA-PMR features, but with that specific lab and rash.
That sounds like
adult
Still's disease, even though she's older than the typical demographic.
It can happen in older adults, too, less commonly, but it's possible. This just shows how tricky these cases get, right? Overlapping symptoms, needing to pivot based on new information like that ferritin.
Yeah. You have to keep digging for those specific clues.
Exactly.
So this whole deep dive into FUO, it's about taking those 200 plus possibilities and narrowing them down, systematically ruling things out, yes, but also actively hunting for those positive clues, the super high ferritin, the specific rash, the age risks, the travel history.
Precisely. And it's worth remembering, like we said, and maybe up to a quarter of cases, even after all that digging, you might not find a definitive answer.
Right.
And that doesn't always mean failure. Sometimes the fever resolves on its own. Prognosis is good. It just reflects the complexity of the human body. Doesn't mean you miss something obvious.
That's actually kind of reassuring. So next time you're on rounds, you encounter that patient with a prolonged, unexplained fever. Take a deep breath. Use these frameworks. Think. Geography, age, those high-yield clues. Mm. Go out there and apply what you've learned. And hey, we genuinely love to hear about your own challenging FUO cases, or maybe how these insights helped you out on your next rotation. Let us know.
Keep questioning, keep learning, and keep diving deep.